Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Valerie with Tweaking Your Vibrations, Blog Talk Radio. We are going to be speaking with the author Katie Pittner on her novel Darker Shades of Midnight, and I'm actually having, I think, a little bit of technical difficulty, so we will wait a few minutes for her to reconnect. But in the meantime, let me go ahead and we'll play a little bit of music, and we'll be right back. I think we're going to bring her on in just a minute, so let me share a little bit about Katie before she comes on. Well, my music. Let me just see if we can stop that a minute. Okay. All right, before we bring Katie on, I just want to share a few things about her. She lives in the beautiful scenic Tennessee Valley with her husband and two children, along with several dogs, four cats, and a bunny. And from an early age, she showed an interest in writing, resulting in keeping a journal of work about the age of 15. Along with her writing, she enjoys gardening, playing the piano, composing music, and doting over her beloved Chihuahua mix Spunky. So when time permits, you can also find her enjoying and catching up on the recent vampire movies and novels. We'll be sharing some of the sites that you can connect her with as we go along. And I just want to say I met Katie on Twitter last year and found her responses to others to be fun and lighthearted and sassy and very funny and creative. So I knew I wanted to get her to know her better. So once we got to know each other on Twitter, we also connected on Facebook. And in getting to know her there as well, I was really happy that she was able to find the time to be with us today. So without further ado, let's bring her on. Katie, are you there?
I think I am now.
There you are. I was hearing a little buzzes and snores. I said, well, you know, Block Talk can be this way sometimes, too. But yay, we got a clean connection. Awesome. How are you? I know the weather's great here, so seeing that we kind of live in the same state, I can imagine it's kind of nice down there. I'm hoping.
Oh, it's gorgeous. If I knew it wasn't going to frost, I'd be in my garden today.
Yeah, I know. You're right. You're right about the frost. There's always seems to be like one final big one before, April 15th. It seems like we always get hit with one big one right around April, too. So
yeah.
Just fantastic. Well, I'm so happy you joined us. And, you know, this has been a big kind of a interesting 6 months, last 6 months with you. In regards to the accident that you got into, I'm really glad you're still here.
Woo. I am too. The night it happened, I was a little concerned that that was it. And I was like, this is not, I can't, my bucket list isn't done.
Well, I was just reading a little bit about that, you know, when we were connecting too. And I thought, you know, it definitely shifts a few things in perspective, doesn't it?
It does. And the night it happened, my daughter was with me. And I had 2 seconds before it happened, I told her, I said, Maddie, go ahead and get in front of me, because if this car comes around the curve and hits anybody, he'll hit me and it'll be okay. And then like 2 seconds later, I get plowed.
Oh, wow.
My husband failed to see the humor in my drug-induced state coming out of the emergency room when I said, hey, honey, let's see if this works with lottery tickets, too.
He probably wasn't concerned too much about the lottery tickets.
I figured I'd been calling them and they'd been coming true. I figured we were going to win the lottery.
That's right. It's on your bucket list.
It is.
Ooh. Well, you know, before we get into some of the specifics of your novel, you know, in a couple of our conversations we were sharing, you were sharing a bit about your writing process with me, as well as the age of when you started writing this novel. So can you share with the rest of us a bit about that time?
Yes. I started writing the premium scenes for this particular book when I was in English class in 10th grade. I was 15 years old. And apparently I was a repressed 15-year-old, too, because if you've had the book, it's chapter 8 is what I wrote. Everything got built around chapter 8. For those of you that don't know, it's a romance book, and that's the good scenes.
Awesome.
And as I've kind of grown, the main character, Gabriella, has grown also. And the way I pegged her age was I went back like 200 years from when I was born. And she was born the same year I was, just 200 years before, because that way I could keep up with the age and not be inaccurate.
Oh,
didn't
wow.
have to do math that way. So, you know, from there, it went mainly to writing as a stay-at-home mom, because for anybody that's had children, you know, once they go down for a nap, you don't really feel like cleaning the house. You know you have to, but you don't feel like it. And once that's done, you have to find things to keep your brain going or you go insane. And my time was sitting at the computer and working on just different scenes. And at one point, this particular book was just a bunch of different scenes in no particular order on my computer.
Oh, wow.
I have a very ADD writing process, which fits perfectly with me because I'm very ADD.
Well, you know, not only do you part of this creative process do you write, but you also were, we were sharing a little bit about some of the other things that you like to do with, like, the composing music and playing the piano, one of my bucket list things. But how does that differ, like writing and composing music? How does that differ a little bit about from writing the fictional novel, and what does that process feel like for you?
Well, the process for composing music is, I would love to say it's creative, and I'm sure for some people it is, but I learned the technical aspect of it. And so there's a lot of, you know, pre-planning that goes into it. You have to know which chords you're going to use, and you're going to have to count out, like, I think I used the 1-3-5 chord method for the, because that's the easiest one to do for me. And you have to kind of have an idea of where you're going, and there's not a lot of leeway because what might work in your head doesn't necessarily always work when you're playing it out on the keyboard. I have some compositions at home that sound like cats screaming, and so I have found that I have more freedom in throwing words together than I do in throwing notes together.
I bet. Well, you know, it's something, you're right about the chords and learning the chords and stuff, because even though it sounds like you want to have this melody in your head, if certain chords put together, it does sound like all the screeching and white noise. So that was kind of cool to share that process. Thanks. But, you know, I just love the fact that you do multiple things, you know, about being creative, you know, whether it's music or writing. A lot of times people will start out young and have those creative processes, but it seems like as they grow up, it's like they put those away, when actually they can enhance our life. You know, it doesn't have to be about not being able to have those creative expressions. Have you found that that's actually helped?
It has immensely helped. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be an artist. And my dad told me that there was a lot of work involved in that, and that it wouldn't be a good career because I wouldn't make any money. And I wish he had lived long enough. I do some oil restorations on paintings and stuff, and I wish he had lived long enough to see that first paycheck, because for 4 hours of work, I brought home a paycheck of like $200, and then after expenses, it was like $150. And I was like, no money. Like, why can't more people have paintings they need fixed? But it's great because it takes so much stress out of me. You know, if I'm having a bad day, I will, like, I like to sing too. I'll drive down the road singing as loud as I can, and I'm sure other motorists probably don't appreciate it on some days when I'm off key, but by the time I get home, I feel so much more relaxed that I'm able to be with my family and be with, you know, my friends and not be this evil person that I know is lurking in there somewhere, but she's not out of her cage yet.
Yeah, that's probably a lot healthier pounding on, being able to use some of these creative pursuits than kicking a cat or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and my cats would fight back.
Well, I know you were sharing that your it seems like your house is like the animal whisperer. Lots of fun creatures come out and play.
Yes. I live not too far from the Chickamauga battlefield in Chickamauga, Georgia. And in that little area, people will dump animals out, especially this time of year. They'll just dump them out because they don't want them, or they've had a litter of puppies or a little litter of kittens. And some of my best pets have come from that battlefield. And so if a stray wanders up, it knows it has a home. I have a little box sitting out front in the house of the house with little blankets and stuff in it. And I can't tell you how many times I've come out and there's been like five or six animals just crawled up in the box, sleeping away. I was like, oh, great, more mouths to feed. Yay.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, you're right. I guess, there is a lot. And that's what somebody was sharing with me, in working with different animals and finding that adoption. A lot of times, unfortunately, they find other homes or they get a little bit of abandonment. So I'm glad that you are an animal lover. My daughter probably will thank you for that.
I'm very much an animal lover. It stunted my career at one point because I was an animal control officer, and I had issues with the euthanasia aspect of the job. I couldn't do it. I tried. I couldn't do it. It was killing me by very slow degrees. And so I finally had to say, look, I'm sorry, I can't do this job anymore. I can't do that to little babies, because that's what they are to me. They're babies. You know, they're the number of children that I wanted to have when I was young, but wised up after the second one going, hey, this hurts.
Yeah, and I went on to have three, so I totally get it. They definitely keep me young, though. Well, I wanted to share while we're talking. We're talking with Katie Pittner, and we're also going to start talking about her book, Darker Shades of Midnight. You can find Katie on Facebook at K-D-Pittner, P-I-T-N-E-R, /fan/club. Also on Twitter, just twitter.com/Katie_Pittner. P-I-T-N-E-R, and then MySpace, /Katie Pittner. So those three areas I put in the chat room, but also you can find her there. And thank you, guests, for joining us on the conversation today.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! Well, you know, I just wanted to kind of bring it into this, before we go there. Oh, also you can find her book on Amazon, Books A Million, and Barnes & Noble, along with a few other places. I wanted to kind of go into our book as we're going towards there, but before we ask about this, I wanted to read the back of your book because the mysterious question pulled me in, but also I read your book, Katie, in one sitting because it was so relatable to connect to these characters. And, there is a vampire theme throughout the book. I'm not going to say specifically how, but what I loved about it was just the characters were very connective and easy to connect to. And so I just kept going. I'd maybe eat and then I'd get back and start reading. And there's not, you know, it's not a big page novel. There's about 336 pages to it. So being a reader, I thought I can conquer this. But now I want more. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But let me just share a little bit what says on the back of the book. It says, A Life Lost to the Ages. For centuries, Adrian McGregor has walked in the shadows, hiding from the memories of a life that was stolen from him, until he found her, a child that offered the promise of fulfillment of that life, a soul searching for a home. Gabriella was lost and alone in the world, orphaned shortly after her fourth birthday. Wandering the banks of the Thames, she finds the man who will deliver her from poverty and into the hands of the devil. Watching her grow into a woman was a privilege, but now Adrian must protect Gabriella from an abusive husband and the angel of death, his maker, Mora. More importantly, he must protect her from the feelings that her presence has stirred to life deep within his icy heart. Can he make her see the light when they are both bound together in darker shades of midnight? Woo! I wish I had one of those very seductive voices that you can, you know, have the audiobook, because a lot of people have those audiobooks. But, you know, can you share some of the special connection of the characters with you, a little bit about them and why they were, you know, how special they are with you?
Well, Gabrielle is the easiest one to explain because, like I said, she's me in some aspect. She is the woman that I've always been raised to be, the dutiful wife, the obedient child. And then in some aspects, she's the woman that I want to be, the one who's going to rebel and do what she wants, even though everybody around her is going, no, you got to do this. It's for the best. And if you read the book, you'll see that's Adrian's favorite line with her. You have to do this. It's for the best. And it makes her so mad. And it did me growing up. I was like, you know, I wanted to go out with my friends to the movies or something. My mom's like, no, you have to stay home with me because it's for the best. And granted, years later, I look back and I see my mom knew me better than I did. And it was for the best. But, you know, she was a very easy one for me to connect with and to tap into. Adrian was, he started off as, you know, a 15-year-old girl's mind. He started off as the man I wanted for my husband. And as I've gotten older, I've been very fortunate to find a man that possesses a lot of the same qualities. So as I finished writing the novel, Adrian took on more and more of my husband. Now, physically, he looks nothing like my husband. Physically, I modeled him after Gerard Butler because that man is smoking. But, you know, my husband is attractive, but he's not Gerard Butler. no offense, honey, if you're listening.
yeah, you go home to him, so that's what's important.
That's what's important, yes. Now, one of the other characters, Samuel, is kind of, he's my religious self. He's a priest. He is trying to do everything he can to remain pure to God. And that is me in some way. I mean, you know, when you're raised in a very strict Christian home, you get ingrained with a certain amount of beliefs that whether you totally buy everything that goes with them or not, you cling to them. And, just for the record, I wasn't raised Catholic. I was actually raised Southern Baptist, but I've always felt a kinship to the Catholic religion. And when I was married to my first husband, I actually converted. So I do feel some connection there as well. But he asks a lot of the questions that I'm constantly pondering. You know, like, if we're made in God's image, why are there ugly people? You know, things like that. he gets much more philosophical, though. then Alexander, unfortunately, is modeled after my ex-husband. Like all very young, stupid people, I rushed into a relationship thinking that I knew what was best for me in spite of everyone else. And short of God himself coming down on my wedding day and standing before me and saying, don't marry this man, he gave me every other sign. You know, the car broke down, they lost our rings, the blood test got screwed up, we almost didn't get the marriage certificate. There, it was there that it wasn't meant to be.
And, oh, wow.
And then once we got married, you know, people kind of come out of their cocoon once you are in a relationship that has the intimacy that marriage has. And I saw parts of him that I didn't like. And at one point he tried to be abusive, and I let him know I wasn't that kind of girl, and we solved that problem very quickly. But he's Alexander's thought process, his kind of attitude of being better than everybody, just are all the bad parts that I can remember of my ex-husband. My ex-husband has many good parts, and I will say that. He just didn't have so many for me. And I actually modeled the physical aspect of him after, like, my all-time favorite actor. And that particular actor, his name is Geordie Johnson. He's a Canadian actor. He does a lot of the Stratford Shakespeare Festivals. And one of my bucket list things is to go see him on stage doing that. And the age difference between Gabriella and Alexander is very much the age difference between me and that actor. And he just lucked out to be my favorite actor when I was 15, and he's managed to remain so. And so he got a spot in the book.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Well, I know that there's a couple other, you know, characters that you were, you know, that we were talking about. Maura was an interesting character, and I know that she's going to be a continuation process for you based on what you were sharing. Yes.
Yes, Moira. I love Moira. She is everything that I think almost any woman wants to be but can't. She's 100% comfortable in her sexuality. She has absolutely no concerns for what society thinks of, you know, her relationships with members of the opposite sex, which, you know, nowadays is not as big as it was when I was growing up, but still. you know, she is ultimately comfortable in her own skin, and if the world is not the way she wants it, she will make it the way she wants it. And I just love that particular, you know, aspect of her. And I gave it away on the back of the book, she is a vampire. And in the next book, I will go ahead and spoil this much, she's not a vampire. And you'll just have to read the next book to find out about that.
Ooh.
And I'm looking forward to that because I've had the most fun writing her as a mortal also, because she's not concerned with things the way most people are. She's still very much a flippant, you know, flamboyant, you know, just awe-inspiring character. But at the same time, she's faced with the finite aspect of life, and she's having to cope with that. And I think it's going to be a very interesting turn for her.
That's really cool. Well, you know, you were sharing that also that writing for you is a spiritual process. Can you say a little bit more about that?
For me, when I sit down and I write, it's words on a page. And, I mean, I can glorify it or I can accept it. It's words on a page. But those words are kind of tantamount to my soul. It's a small piece of my soul that I'm taking out of me and putting out there. And so everything that you read in there, like it, hate it, whatever, it's all part of me. And so I have to process a lot of things while I'm writing. I have to process, you know, if a character wants to do something, I have to look at it like, well, why would they want to do that? Why would I want to do that if I were them? And I actually delve into a lot of self-exploration just from pondering all of those questions. And one thing that I don't think anybody realizes is that writers actually make wonderful investigators because we try to look at every angle. And, you know, especially with Samuel, when I was writing him, I found that I was answering a lot of my questions about my own religion and about my own belief system and my own belief structure without ever consulting anybody who is a great mind on the subject. I wasn't consulting priests. I wasn't consulting pastors. I wasn't consulting, spiritualists, mediums. I was dealing with my own, inner demons regarding my religious beliefs. And it has been very cathartic, and at the same time, it's been very awakening, and it's allowed me to free myself up to embrace more of the opportunities that life has to offer.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking as, a fellow writer, because we, different genres, and you and I were talking about, how do you, flip it from, some of the things to me is kind of mostly inspiration or non-fictional, stuff mm-hmm. or higher thoughts that I'd have. So it's kind of cathartic and spiritual. But, for those people that want to work in, activating characters and stuff, what's one of the things that you can share to kind of help jumpstart, being able to expand there? Because I think we were talking about that a little bit. Because your characters stay, they talk to you.
Yes, very much
so.
Not lately, but very much so. When they're active, they're in my head and they're going, and I just have to listen to the little voices. You can do a lot of things. When I first started writing, if I hit writer's block, I would try meditating because it seems like the quieter you get your mind, the more their mind wants to pop up. Another thing that I have found that has been just a godsend is watching other people. I actually wrote a short story that I've never published because I was about 16 at the time, and I'm terrified to go back and read it because I had a very twisted mind then. But our washer had broken down at the house. We had to go to a laundromat. And I watched this woman all night, and she just seemed so out of place in this laundromat. And she actually wound up becoming a character in the short story. And it was about a woman who was very wealthy, and her car broke down, and she was stuck in the worst part of town in a laundromat. And once the character gets kind of a form to it, then you'll start hearing the character say, "Hey, I wouldn't do that. What's wrong with you? Stop that." or "Hey, that's what I want to do. Make me do that." And that's where your fun comes from. But you have to get that foundation, and people watching is a wonderful way to do it. Another wonderful thing to do is to not be afraid to try new things. I've never been skydiving, and I still haven't been officially skydiving because I just think it's completely insane to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. But when I went to Pigeon Forge, I did try the air tunnel that allows you to feel like you're skydiving.
Wow.
So I have that experience, even if I haven't jumped out of a perfectly good airplane.
You were kind of taking a baby step.
baby steps. Baby steps are good. They may take longer, but you'll get there.
Well, one of the just when I was listening to you talk, I was thinking about something that, in stepping out into some of the fictional characters, it could be like, we're never too old to try something new. That was one of the themes about the bucket list that you were bringing up earlier, but it could be kind of like just a part of us that we want to explore, and we kind of explore it vicariously on page. So that's what kind of popped into my mind when I was sitting there listening to you share about how they talk to you, and you know, I thought, wow, you know, there is a lot of pieces of us and parts of us that it'd probably be safer to try on the paper than it is out in real in the real world, you know, in front of people, so to speak.
Right. And, you know, one thing that's wonderful for people with the living vicariously through other characters, if you hit writer's block, the easiest way I've found to overcome writer's block is to pick up one of your favorite authors and read their book. Because your mind will, just from reading it, your mind will get into that mindset again. You'll know how the words are supposed to flow. You'll feel it. And unfortunately, my life this last few months has not allowed me to sit down and just read a book. Because I got the broad idea that, you know, after overcoming surgery, I could remodel my den. It is very finally, but it was not the brightest idea I've ever had. And so, yeah, I'm slowly realizing that as I'm getting older, I'm not She-Ra, Princess of Power anymore.
Or she's going to be in the book. You know, one of your books.
she's going to be. She can't be called She-Ra because of copyright infringement.
Right.
But, yeah, she will definitely pop up.
Yeah, she'll definitely be an aspect. Well, speaking of other writers and writer's block, that is a great pivot point, because I find the same thing. Like when I'm wanting to write something and I feel stuck, I'll either put in a movie by something that really inspires me, or write with my favorite authors, because there is a activation, so to speak, about creativity. But who were some of the people that you felt inspired you? Like, you know, when you know, we talk about you being young when it showed up and putting these parts, these works together. Who were some of the people along the way that inspired you? You know, what authors and stuff that did you find that were really helped
well,
you?
One of the big ones for me was Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough. And she is an amazing author, and she's hilarious. I actually managed to meet her one time, and she's hilarious. And she gave me the biggest compliment. She has a book called Hotel Transylvania. She actually has about 80 books or more.
Wow.
But the one that's really, really been a, I guess, an anchor for me in this big sea of everything has been Hotel Transylvania, because it was the first one I read by her. And it's part of her St. Germain Chronicles. And there was a character in there named Madeline de Montalia. And she has inspired me so much that when I had the chance to meet her, I was at a convention, and there was going to be a masquerade ball that night, and I dressed up like Madeline. And she paid me the biggest compliment ever, and she told me that I looked like Madeline, like what she saw when she wrote Madeline out. And that stuck with me. And as I got older, I started thinking of all the things that Madeline had as kind of the core, you know, strengths of her being. And I was like, I want my daughter to have that. So my daughter's name is Madeline.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's beautiful. And she knows that story, I'm sure, by now.
Actually, I have not seen her since I had children, so she probably doesn't. I'm not big on writing fan mail.
I mean, as far as the Madeline, your daughter, does she know how she, how her
name
came about?
Oh, yes. Madeline knows by the time she's 16, she will have read Hotel Transylvania, and she will be able to discuss it with me, and she will be able to tell me why St. Germain is the most awesome vampire character ever.
Wow. Now, do you find, you know, switching gears in that, do you find, is there a particular theme? Do you, what was the interest around vampires? Because, you know, we were just discussing about some of the movies out there, you know, it's like they've almost, they're on the rise, especially in the last 2 or 3 years. But what did you, you know, on TV and movies as well, as what do you think the attraction or the allure is about vamps?
Well, I've actually always had it. My mother mm-hmm. said even as a small child, I was fascinated with things that a good Christian girl wouldn't be fascinated with. Because I used to read up on magic and vampires and werewolves and witches and ghosts. And I still love ghosts. I actually have one in my house. I love him. His name is Bob. I don't know his real name because he won't talk to me, but his name is Bob. And, you know, He does things like open doors and stuff, and so I figured only a man would think opening a door was scary, so his name is Bob.
Bob the ghost.
Yeah, Bob the ghost. And, you know, I've always had that attraction to that particular thing, and I think the strongest pull for me with vampires is a very primal self-preservation pull, because truth be told, nobody wants to die. It's just the hand we're dealt. And if I could find a way to cheat the hangman, you better believe I'd be jumping on it with both feet. Because I like this world. I have a lot of fun here. And if I would have the chance to experience centuries of things that, you know, of history and witness it firsthand, to me, that would be the most astounding thing ever. That would be the greatest gift I could get. This is not to say that I'm rushing out going on these vampire boards going, hey, will you turn me? Because, you know, they're fiction. But the allure of that is extremely, extremely powerful. I mean, one of the things that I was drawn, that tumbling over my words here, one of the things that drew me to St. Germain in the books by Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough was St. Germain was an actual person. And he created a huge stir in the 1700s in Paris because he claimed to have the elixir of life. And, you know, that to me, if I could get somebody to make me a potion and I could drink it and live forever, you better believe I'd do it.
The immortal of Onis. Well, you know, you're right. He was known as a healer. So
yeah.
Very true. Wow. I've never heard of him as a vamp, though. That might be interesting to investigate.
And, her books are amazing. He never delves into the sexual aspect of it, but they're so sensual. I mean, you have romance novels that will lay out every detail for you, and it's like reading a softcore porn movie. And then you have her books where you walk away with that feeling that you have if you have a dream about somebody that loves you and you have that pervasive feeling of love pouring over you when you wake up. That's how you feel after you read about him, because
wow.
He's sensual but not sexual. But given my mindset, I can make anything sexual. So,
well, Scorpios are really known for their sexual sensuality anyway.
Yeah.
If anybody doesn't know that Katie is a Scorpio, well, there you go. Some of that part I'm sure got mixed in the book. For anyone listening to us, I am chatting with Katie Pittner, the author of the book Darker Shades of Midnight. You can find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, as well as you can find Katie on Facebook at Katie Pittner Fan Club, Twitter at twitter.com Katie Pittner, and at myspace.com Katie Pittner. And I'm sharing those links in our chat room as well. So thanks. A shout out to our guests that joined us in our chat room. Thank you very much. I'm hoping that you're enjoying this process as well as I am. You know, you had some angst, and I love the way that you did a couple angles, you know, talking about destiny and also you know, when you were sharing some of the process of what your background and how some of the characters were developed and in ways connected to you, it makes that those characters actually more enhanced. Finding that out, Katie, now after reading the book, so you know it's like wow. You know, I guess there is some of that soul part that you were talking about a little earlier. It did get expressed in the book through these characters. You know, it's like you were an extension of parts of you, and that was really cool to be able to connect to as you were sharing that a little earlier. But that was cool. And
one of the things that killed me when my son lost the book. That was one of the things that killed me because I felt like part of my soul had disappeared.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I know that sounds kind of silly, but it was almost like losing a child, you know, because, I mean, children are an extension of your soul, too. And I had put more work than 9 months into creating this book, and with one click of a button, he deleted it.
Oh, well, so, we were talking about that. That's right. I forgot. Oh, my gosh. You know, I've had, there's other been author stories that talked about that. But, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about the drama, you know. Yeah. Because you had been talking about, I mean, you know, pivoting on that. There's a couple things that you wanted to share in this last couple minutes about to other authors, and I think it's about not giving up, and then about some of your the process. Like I think you were talking about creating, putting little notebooks. Can you share a few things about what they can do in their process of working with characters?
Yes, you know, if you have somebody and they pop into your head and they start talking, write them down. You know, even if it's not anything you'd ever let anybody else read, write them down, save it, keep a journal, because you never know when that story is going to pop up where that character is going to fit. And that whole thing that you had no clue what was going on in your head just suddenly makes sense. I have boxes of notebooks in my garage of things that are just little snippets of different stories that have yet to come into fruition because my brain's just not there yet. But when it gets there, you better believe they'll be used. And, you know, find the process that works for you more than anything. I mean, I'm ADD, so nothing I do is ever in order. And this second book that I'm working on, I'm trying to go in order. I'm trying to make everything flow, because it's so much easier when you go back to edit, because you don't have to go, oh, wait a second, that didn't happen then, that happened back then, and you have to go and change dates and stuff, and it does go a lot easier when you do it in order, but if that's not what works for you, it's going to take you forever. It's, you know, it's taking me forever, and my characters are getting mad at me, and they're not talking to me, and my imaginary friends don't want to play, and it's lonely. So, you know, find the process that works for you, and don't ever give up. Some of the world's greatest authors got rejection letters. So don't ever give up. I spared myself the rejection letter by self-publishing, mainly because I was scared to death my son was going to delete it again. But I was like, I can't leave it on the computer anymore. It's got to go somewhere. And, you know, it's only been the last year. It's been published since 2008, but it's only been the last year that I've really started pushing anything with it, because I wasn't there yet, and now I'm there, and I'm wanting to work on it. And, you know, have faith in your own abilities. Don't ever let anybody tell you that your work is not what's acceptable, because we're all artists. We're all given the gift of creation. Some of us just forget that. And so, you know, and the ones who can't are the ones who are going to critique.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And I know that you're playing with the title of the next book. But a few of the favorites are going to be showing up, one of them being Samuel. Yes, still?
Yes. It's focused on Samuel, and he's going to be a lot different.
And I loved it. I love the way you mixed him up, you know. And I'm going to go take a look at some of these actors that were connected to your, well, the ones that I had met, seen yet. But anyway, in wrapping up, I'm so looking forward to your next book. For everyone, please go go check out her book, Darker Shades of Midnight, with K.D. Pittner, because I think you'll enjoy it just as much as I did. Thanks so much for joining us today. I just so appreciate it. I've been wanting to have a chat with you, and I'm so appreciative that you were able to find the time and come join us, because writers, it's always fun to get inside a writer's head, so
yeah,
to speak, and find
it's
out.
It's a strange world up there.
Well, you just gave a lot of insights, too, about, you know, helping start the writer process, because, you know, we can call from my own experiences and watching other people. So that was beautiful. So I really look forward to reading your next book, Katie, that's going to be fun, and keep us posted. You can find her again on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. And next week I'm going to be chatting with another very creative friend, diva artist Carla Sanders, about the many roles she brings healing medicine into our world. So please join me, everyone, to learn more about that. And until next time, please remember who you are is more important to nurture and grow than any other roles you choose to play out in the world today. So love and light, everyone. Thanks, Katie. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.